offices. Yesterday, cars and bus shelters were set alight, and the police responded with tear gas and baton rounds. BBC News. Well, now on Radio 4, it's time for the classic serial. And today we begin a two-part dramatisation of Desolation Island by Patrick O'Brien, starring David Robb as Captain Jack Aubrey, with Richard Delane as the naval surgeon and spy, Stephen Maturin. In 1811, Captain Aubrey has been ordered to set sail from Portsmouth for Australia in his new command, the Leopard, but he's about to receive some unwelcome news.
Bloody blackguards! I should throw up the service and my flag be damned.
Will there be a reply, sir?
There will, by God. Mr. Byron, sir. When Dr. Maturin has helped me to some particular epithets, Mr. Byron.
Reply later, sir. Aye.
Captain Aubrey thanks their lordships for...
For acting such a pack of sodomites as even I should scarcely credit. God knows, Stephen. I've suffered the Admiralty ever since I took up the curse, but never supposed there could be such...
Hold your hands, you clumsy bugger!
To send to Portsmouth, catch me at the very boarding of my own new command, to tell me that the Leopard is to be used for transportation.
This might seem the prime function of a ship.
I mean, transportation.
So I understand.
The transportation of convicts, Stephen. God's my life. Convicts! Here, read! An officer of my seniority. Turned my ship into a transport, and myself to play the turnkey.
I collect we were bound anyway for Botany Bay. Is your dignity so offended, Jack, by a score of passengers, howsoever unwilling?
I am to have a cage built in the forepeak.
Willingly stuffed your holds with French and Spaniards in the past?
Prisoners of war are completely different from jailbirds.
We have both sailed with men guilty of the most atrocious crimes. We have been ourselves prisoners for war and for debt. I find my dignity not much affected thereby.
Flash Newgate cullies lurking in my hold.
And they'll never be brought into contact with you, being under the conduct of proper persons.
Do you say I am not proper?
Where shall you stow the women?
The what?
See.
Ugh, those damn nuts of hell.
Desolation Island by Patrick O'Brien. Dramatized for radio by Roger Daines. Episode 1.
One moment! Maggie, take these. The fire, quickly.
Mrs. Weldon, I have authority to beat the door down. Open it!
Directly, sir. I'm looking for the key.
There is too much, Mum. Far too much.
I'll be it.
I will not let us be taken.
Louisa Wogan! Knock that bitch down!
Tell me, Blaine, what is the nature of my summons?
I wish with all my heart I could make clear-cut reply, but my dear Maturin, a correspondence of the heart rarely reaches to 40 pages of foolscap, even between two ladies.
Yet, notwithstanding...
I never like to see a woman hanged, do you?
Hey, Dr. Maturin. What the devil is all this business?
I know no more than that you required my presence, sir.
Then I shall not beat about the bush. The Home Office people have picked up a couple of trollops that spend their time getting information. In their papers was found your name.
I do not understand you, sir.
Admiral Seavart is aware that you are in no way subordinate in our department.
Just so. These two women, a Mrs. Wogan and a Mrs. Villiers. The Secretary of State's office has had its eye upon them for some time, particularly upon the Wogan. Connections with some dubious characters among the loyalist Frenchmen over here, and with some known American agents. At last, a decision was taken to act, and upon my word, it was high time. In Villiers' house, they found these papers. They appear to be your manuscript. Can you tell me what I should say to the Home Office on your behalf?
I do not see anything in my hand that is other than private correspondence between myself and Mrs. Villiers.
Mrs. Wogan was found to have possessed herself also of some naval papers.
From whom?
A junior civil lord here at the Admiralty. He is already dealt with.
And is my name in them? Is it?
There is enough to hang the Wogan out of hand, but that she has some very respectable protectors.
Or at least some very influential.
She is a remarkable fine woman.
You have struck a bargain.
She is to plead guilty to a charge that will send her over the water.
No more?
We could have laid her for attempted murder. She shot the wig off a constable's head.
And what of Mrs. Villiers?
It has been decided not to proceed. Mrs. Villiers has become an American citizen.
The lady is shrewd.
Pressing their men out of their ships is annoying enough to the Yankees. Best not to press their women too, though damned if I should mind it. She stood up for herself amazingly. An even finer woman than the Wogan, straight as an arrow, glaring at us like a wildcat, flushed with anger, lovely bosom trembling.
You forget yourself, sir.
I came in for a couple of broadsides, flung her letters in my face as a mere amorous intrigue. Wish I'd had some of that intrigue myself.
You are impertinent, sir.
The Admiral speaks in jest.
He speaks like a libidinous potboy. No doubt he's been a salivating over these letters, as if my hand also may be proof of intrigue with this lady.
Let me remind you, Dr. Maturin, that there is such a thing as discipline in this service.
And let me remind you, sir, that there is such a thing as respect. Good day to you, gentlemen. You know where to find me. So, in spite of my saying I should not voyage,
no one could be more glad of it than me.
He spoke slightingly of Diana Villiers. Pulled a man's nose for far less.
You would have fought Sivrite, an admiral.
I did not, though. I fared ill with the duelling before. I've learned the lesson.
Diana?
He's gone.
With Mr.
I know his name.
Ah, I'm sorry for it.
I settled her debts.
Many?
Enough. More than.
You're not obliged.
Well, I did it, so.
I must say, Stephen, it wanted but you to make up a company after my own heart. I have four lieutenants. Four! And Tom Pullings for my first. Any number of old shipmates have come aboard. It is a charming commission.
Even though it is the horrible old leopard.
Do not say so, I beg.
Oh, did we not always?
Well, we did. And to be sure, she did used to be something of a slug. But the dockyard has so taken her in hand, Stephen.
You'll be telling me next that no expense has been spared.
They have quite refashioned everything abaft the clumps of the quarterdeck. New spurcketing, Snodgrass's diagonal braces, Robert's iron plate knees throughout.
The very thing for a distant voyage, sure.
Well, I shall spare you further details then. But the Leopard is the finest 50-gun ship afloat. No, I assure you! For once, the Admiralty has done the handsome thing by me.
I think you should have had a first rate. And a peerage.
Well, what I have is 448-pound broadside weight of metal. I shall claw up any French or Dutch frigate something glorious.
Should we meet more than a frigate?
They have no ship of the line in the Spice Islands.
The Spice Islands. Such a fauna there alone. And then, New Holland.
I'm sure you'll have time for a wombat. Or a kangaroo. Or beetles, cassowaries.
Jack, it is the voyage of the world. I should have been a fool to have missed it. I should have it. That is the women come aboard.
Take those men's names at once! Where's that whistling, I say?
God damn them. A parcel of male prisoners would be enough. And these cause trouble already. How I do hate a woman.
That is a rank untruth, Jack Aubrey.
Aboard! They bring ill luck. That is to say, the men believe. They make a sorry heart, an heavy countenance, a wounded mind, weak hands, and feeble knees. That is in the Bible, Stephen. I read it myself.
The 18th of August, 1811. 45 degrees, 82 minutes north, 7 degrees 30 west. Main topsail, course southwest to half west. At 3:30, set fore topmast and main staysails. Heavy seas, northwesterly gale beginning to abate. Rain. This coffee has been heated up, Killick. Boiled.
If people lie in their cots, they'll all know us.
Where's the doctor? And take your thumb out of the butter.
It works in six bells in the morning watch, Your Honour. And it weren't in it. Nowhere near.
Then jump forward and tell him of this vile boiled coffee, if you can bear it.
Which is another pot coming up, and Mr. Pulling's to drink it.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, sir.
You look as though you could do with breakfast. Please.
It would go down very welcome, sir.
Well, you have a pretty bad report.
That I have, sir.
Not a mast sprung, I hope.
The convicts have scragged their superintendent.
Is he dead?
His brains are all over the forepeak. They must have done it with their irons.
Damn them! Trouble before we even clear Biscay. The culprit?
It would be a joint enterprise, sir. Chained as they are, no one man could have done it. I have posted some marines over them just in case, but never a one of them could hurt a fly now. They're all more or less dead, so seasick. Hardly strength enough to groan.
Or have their surgeon see to them?
Him the doctor has presently in the sick bay. It seems Mr. Simpson pitched down into the hold and broke his neck.
Well, I'm sure the doctor will set him to rights. You remember, Tom, how he sawed the gunner's head.
I will not this time. I cannot mend a severed spinal cord.
And a good morning to you, Stephen.
Man was as dead as a rabbit forever they picked him up.
First pot, Your Honours.
Well, that's better. And will you re-sling my cot, Killick? It was soaked last night.
Re-slinging a cot, sir. Bleeding corpse at the yard. I know no business.
He's more sullen than usual, because after little more than a week, we have torn him from the arms of his bride.
Killick married?
He bought a wife. All legal. She was brought to market in a halter by her former husband.
Thank you. I've heard of the custom. Did not know it's still to be practised.
Well, where would the Navy be without we followed the old customs?
Oh, sir, I was forgetting. While we were raising Mr. Simpson out of the hold, we found a stowaway.
In a man of war? Never heard of such a thing.
Well, I beg leave to observe, Stephen, that there are a great many things in a man of war of which you have never heard.
That may be so, though I am become tolerably amphibious. Would this stowaway be the dirty, torn young man outside, being glared at by the marine sergeant?
It would.
Then let us have him in before we go tackle the ugly business in the forepeak.
All right, bring him in.
Good morning, sir.
Don't speak to the captain.
Sit him down on the locker there, Sergeant. Then you may go. Now, sir, what is your name?
Michael Harapath, sir. At your service.
What do you mean, Mr. Harapath, by concealing yourself aboard this ship?
Sir, Mike. I beg pardon, sir. I beg pardon. I am not quite well.
Killick! Killick!
Your Honour.
Stow this man in a hammock on the orlop.
Hammock, orlop, sir.
Give you joy of your wedding preserve, Killick.
Well, thank you, Doctor. Come on, mate. It was free to choose, and I sort of picked a bunch.
You did not rush. Matrimony is, I am told, a very serious thing.
Oh, that's all I consider of it. Why, the best part of all, 20 minutes.
But did you not have a wife in Mahon? I'm sure you did. She washed my shirts.
Which I had too, Mr. Pullins. Tubber in Wapping Dock. Hold up, boy. Well, there was more in a roving uncertified line, if you follow me. And not bought legal. The halter put in me hand line.
You best carry him to the orlop, Killick.
Right, you are, sir. Mind you in the door jam, mate.
I saw him before. He came aboard at Portsmouth wanting to join. An educated man on the lower deck. I explained it would never answer. He looked very down.
Well, when it comes to looking down, we'd best look down to the forepeak and these murdering convicts. Do you wish to examine the body, Doctor?
No further, sir. I can tell all I need to know.
You, sir? Are you one of their guardians?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know who did this?
We looked at all the irons so far as we could, but we'd hardly been able to move ourselves and have no orders at all.
So you do not?
In all this wet and filth, sir, sure. One pair of irons is very much the same as another, but I reckon it was that one, sir, the big bastard and his mate there.
May I suggest that these men should be carried up at once and that a windsail should be installed for the air?
We shall make it so, Doctor. Let us see where the women are stowed. You swabbers, bear a hand there. Mr. Pullings! Have a hose shipped in the head, leading down through the manger scuttle.
Sir?
Tell the carpenter to leave everything and repair the forehead chain bump.
Oh, women are held in the carpenter's storeroom, sir.
Oh, comparative light and purity.
You have the key.
I do, sir.
Open it.
Is he nearly
nearly over yet.
It's what?
We ain't had any food, gentlemen. Not for days and days.
What you heard you spewed off?
That will do. The food will be seen to. You must, put on your frock.
I ain't got any clothes left, sir. They stole them.
Who?
Him and the others.
Oh, you lying bitch.
Where are their clothes, then? Get below. See to the clearing of that goddamn cage.
Will you be taking the keys, sir?
Blue and yellow cambric with muslin sleeves. My lady gave it me, and they stole it.
God help us, the scrubs.
Where is my lady? Gentlemen, where have they put her?
Is all well there?
Leave me be. Who is that? Oh.
Good morning, ma'am. I trust I see you well.
Thank you, sir. I'm quite nearly recovered. Will you come in?
Thank you. I will.
Will you not sit down, sir? I'm sorry to have no more than a stool to offer.
You're very good, ma'am. But I fear I'm not at leisure. However, a lantern. Just so. A lantern must be slung from the beam there.
Is my...
A lantern would serve much better. For I must tell you, ma'am, that an unprotected flame cannot possibly be countenanced aboard.
I did not know, sir.
A flame is little less than a crime.
I beg pardon, sir. I am much concerned to hear it.
Crime is perhaps an unfortunate word.
I never will offend again, sir.
A lantern shall be sent to you at once.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you would wish for?
It would be a great comfort, sir.
Yes?
If inquiries might be made for the young woman that attends me. I'm afraid the poor creature may have come to harm.
She's well, ma'am.
Oh, thank God. And if I may have the liberty to take a little air, perhaps the request is improper, but if someone would have the goodness to take the rat away.
The rat, ma'am?
In the corner there, sir. I knocked him on the head at last with my shoe. It was quite a battle.
A gravid rat near her term. Very much infested with fleas. Some anomalous lesions.
It was hit with the heel of a lady's shoe.
These are different. More interesting.
As was Mrs. Wogan, I collect.
I shall take it below to dissect at leisure.
What did you make of the lady?
The door was so narrow. I saw nothing past you at all.
Dangerous, they say. She offered to pistol the Prime Minister or blow up the Houses of Parliament.
Very shocking.
So I had a curiosity to see her. A rare plucton of that, I'm sure. A little space was as neat as a pin.
Is that a measure of her mettle?
It is, compared to them in the forepeak. Have you ever seen such a godforsaken shambles?
I have not. To die of seasick. It occurs to me that now their surgeon is so dead, I shall have to look after the convict's health, too.
Well, I'll set Tom Pullings to find out how their late superintendent victualled them.
They've been carried up to the forecastle, I suppose, the creature.
Mm.
They must be aired at least an hour a day. And then there's your stowaway, Mr. Herapath. What are you to do with him?
Well, now, Tom said he was so very eager to go to sea, better enter him as a supernumerary landsman.
You must not set him to work, I beg, until he's restored. Such emaciation is rarely to be seen. Pap from a small spoon once every watch. He may readily be killed with kindness and a piece of pork.
The lower deck is not noted for its kindness.
Have you ever known a gentleman there?
A few.
Then how did you like it yourself? When you were a midshipman and your captain turned you before the mast for incompetence?
That was not the reason.
You've said he called you a lubber.
A lecherous lubber. I kept a girl in the cable tiers. He was reflecting upon my morals, not my seamanship.
Perhaps I shall step forward and look at my new patients.
Yes, perhaps you should.
My top corners to your bottom. You must be getting better, Peggy. Oh.
Good morning, ma'am.
Take these, Peggy. The guard will bring you back where you came from. Put them on there.
Thank you, ma'am. Good morning, sir.
My name is Maturin, ma'am. I'm the surgeon of this ship.
Mr. Maturin,
Good morning.
I've come to inquire after your health.
You are very good, sir. I am quite well.
Yet your face is somewhat yellower than could be wished. Give me your hand.
Are you the doctor for the whole ship, sir? You alone?
The surgeon of a fourth rate is entitled to two assistants, ma'am. Your tongue, if you please. A laudable tongue, you may put it away. I dare say you have took a good hearty vomit.
Oh, to tell you the truth, sir, I was not sick at all.
No shame, ma'am. As an evacuation of the gross humours and crudities, it is no rival.
I have made several voyages to America, Mr. Maturin. I do not find the motion very troublesome.
Then perhaps we should contemplate a purge. Do you have any reason to apprehend a pregnancy?
Oh, none at all, sir, no. I conceive that I am far more likely to be cribbed and cabined than confined.
Very well.
May it be that my yellow face is connected with my cabining. I must not presume to teach physic to a doctor, but if I might only have a breath of untainted air. I did mention it to the very large gentleman that was here earlier. An officer, I believe?
The captain, madam, of a man of war has a great many things to occupy his mind.
Oh, yes. To be sure. Such a noise. Several times, both at night and day.
'Tis the call to dinner, ma'am. Being a Tuesday, that means 2 pounds of salt beef and a pound of biscuit ahead.
Continue with your meal.
What's an officer doing here, mate?
It's the doctor. Hold your peace.
My Barrett Bonden. Come up here.
Let's all sit down, for God's love.
Wish we're feeding Herapath, sir.
So you are. I hardly recognised you.
Good afternoon to you, sir. I am in kind company. I thank you.
Tom Davis has pounded up the biscuit, and Joel mixes in our juice to make a right smooth pat, like you said, Your Honour. And I sends it home with this very small little teaspoon what Killick got from the captain's plate. Yes. So.
Well, Bonden, you've not like a corpse of him yet. But give him a very little of that at each eighth bell.
Only a little, sir.
Yes, it is less the dimensions of the spoon, Bonden, than the aggregate of pap that will cure him or kill him.
Tuesday, the 22nd. Wind southeast. Course south, 27 west. Cape Finisterre east by south, 12 leagues. Fresh gales, clear weather. At 5, committed bodies of William Simpson, John Alexander, Robert Smith, and Edward Marnow to the deep.
For as much as it hath pleased Almighty God of his great mercy to take unto himself the souls of our dear brothers here departed, William Simpson.
No better than a common thief he was.
Be silent, you whore.
Robert Smith and Edward Marnow. We therefore commit their bodies to the deep, to be turned into corruption, looking for the resurrection of the body when the sea shall give up her dead.
People variously employed. Swifted 4 topmast futtocks. Killed a bullock, weight 522 pounds. Opened salt pork casks 53 and 54. Spoiled.
Stephen, I am at your pleasure.
Then would you be so good as to bring your mind to bear upon my convicts?
Yours?
Mine, because I'm answerable for their health, which, let me tell you, is tolerably precarious.
Collins and I have dealt with that. Hammocks are to be slung in the forepeak, navy fashion.
No more of that vile, coprolytic straw?
No. The people are to be aired on the forecastle, once in the forenoon and once in the dog watch.
Aired is good. And for exercise?
They can pump ship.
And Mrs. Wogan is a gentlewoman also to pump your ship?
There you have me, Stephen.
She cannot long survive in that mephitic, light-forsaken damp cupboard. I tell you that as a medical man.
There's no word about exercise in the superintendent's papers.
Then what is the custom in the transports that usually ply to Botany Bay? They must have occasionally carried privileged persons.
I asked that of the turnkeys. Goddamned half-baked horse and lubbers, they had no idea. Stephen, did you notice the extraordinary likeness between Mrs. Wogan and Diana Villiers?
I did not, sir.
Oh. Well, I cannot invite the lady to walk the quarterdeck since she has been convicted, though clearly she is a gentlewoman.
Oh,
Certainly would not wish to associate with a malefactor.
It would be improper. A very dangerous person, it appears, blazed away left, right and centre when she was taken.
I appreciate your anxiety to the full. No doubt she has a brace of pistols in her pocket now.
She might have liberty to walk occasionally upon the poop.
That could offer a valid solution of your difficulty.
If the weather is clement. Failing that, the gangway.
To reach the poop, she would have to traverse your holy quarterdeck. Doubtless, you will require carronade trained upon her as she does so. May I suggest you consider grape shot? Tobacco. Blessed compensation. That young man at dinner, Tom, the midshipman, Byron.
Mm-hmm.
Is he related to the poet?
Doctor?
The famous Lord Byron.
I believe he is. A grandson. Maybe a great-nephew.
A grandson?
They even now call him Foul Weather Jack, you know. There's fame for you. The whole Navy knows Lord Byron.
Foul Weather?
My granddad sailed with him. Ah, how the Admiral did relish a blow.
Admiral Byron?
Almost loved it as much as our Captain Jack. Would crack on regardless, laughing. Ha, ha, ha. But I don't recall he was said to be much in the poetry line, Doctor.
Was your grandfather an officer, Tom?
Bosun of the Indefatigable at the last. 7 wrecks he went through in his time. It was hearing his tales made me first long to go to sea.
Tales of shipwreck?
Oh, Lord, yes. Grandad fair loved to contemplate upon wrecks. You never know a man, he used to say, until you have seen him in a wreck. Some would hold fast, but the most part all run to pieces.
Yes.
Steady old forecastle hands break into the spirit room and get beastly drunk. Then it's refusing of orders, pillage of cabins.
Oh.
They dress up like Jack in the Green, fight, blackguard their officers. A ship loses herself. Her crew goes all to pieces. There's an old belief on the lower deck that once the ship's aground, or she can't steer, then the captain's authority is gone.
There are a great many foolish old beliefs on the lower deck, Tom.
Aye, but that's the law, they say. And at the end, they jump into boats and swamp them like a parcel of frightened landsmen. Oh,
God and saints preserve us.
Amen. Nothing will get stuff like that out of their stupid heads. Not you, Doctor. Not me. Not even the captain.
Oh.
Come, come. Lose not a minute, I beg.
Mr. Maturin.
I'm come to exercise you, ma'am. To air you for the good of your health. Pray put some woolen garment on your head and shoulders. You'll find the sea air pierce you after this mephitis.
I thank you, sir, for this, your goodness to me.
Not a moment to be lost, ma'am. As soon as they tingle on their bell, it'll be quarters. And then where shall we be? I cannot recommend shoes of that nature.
Oh.
Upstairs, the motion of the ship is far more violent.
What is the proper wear, sir?
Half boots, list slippers, or indeed, bare feet.
Then I am perfectly equipped, sir.
That is the gangway. There you will walk in inclement weather.
Take that man's name at once. You, sir, jump over to the head and back 7 times. Atkins, start him hearty.
This is the quarterdeck. The upper level over there is called the poop. You may walk there today and when it is fine.
Good morning, ma'am.
Doctor.
Good morning, Mr.
Grant, ma'am. You must excuse me.
Quartermaster Mandricon. Full and by there.
Mr. Grant is our second lieutenant. I shall conduct you by the stair, if you please.
Oh. Oh. The wind is so full of life.
Allow me to warn you against indulgence in lowness. Melancholy will certainly pull into a decline.
Perhaps it is no more than the effect of unrelieved Naples biscuits, sir.
Do they not feed you at all?
Oh, yes. I'm sure I shall come to relish it soon.
When did you last eat a square meal?
I do not think I complain.
When?
A long time. Before. A dinner with my friend Diana in London.
Louisa! Louisa! No, sir! What in the name of places do you think you're doing here? Get along, foreign! Atkins! Stop that man! Start him, I say!
You must try to accustom your stomach to the ship's fare.
I shall, sir. I'm sure it is wholesome, though it be somewhat rough.
Use will render it palatable, ma'am.
Of course, you are used to it. You are a sailor, sir. What a great deal you must know. Would you be kind to me and tell me the name of that mast over there?
That is the mizzen, ma'am.
The mizzen. And those sails?
Aft flying topsails with a t'gallant above.
None but a fool, Mr. Grant, starts, beats or abuses a hand for not knowing his duty when that hand cannot conceivably know it, having only just gone to sea.
No, sir.
Any officer-like man, moreover, knows the name of all the people in his watch. It is quite as easy to call out Herapath as you, sir.
I understand, sir.
Discipline and a taut ship are one thing, Mr. Grant. Bullying is quite another. That will do.
Sir.
Doctor, come in.
Some years since I've heard you reprove one of your officers, sir.
Come and have a glass of grog.
Struck by the remarkable advance in your efficacity.
I was required to take him. He had the 60-ton brig Lady Nelson. Sailed her from England to the Cape, thence to New Holland in 1800. 11 months by way of the Bass Strait.
That was a feat, sure, with so small a ship.
She was a brig, Stephen, not a ship. But a feat, yes. Indeed it was. Nobody could doubt his seamanship.
Yet he is still a lieutenant.
Promotion is a tricky affair. I believe Grant contrived to get on the wrong side of the civilians.
He appears not to have the tact of the world.
He fouled someone's whores and they cut his cable. They put him down to the bottom of the lieutenant's list, which is why Tom Pullings may be my first, spite of his age.
I've seen so many disappointed officers.
Yes. Well, that is nothing to what peace may bring.
Mr. Bondon, with your leave, I should like to go up to the Royal Yard.
Well, you couldn't have chose a sweeter day. Joe!
What is it?
Just you carry Herapath here aloft. Thinks he's ready. Show him where to put his feet, like.
You'll want to take care of your hands there, mate. Mr. Pullins don't like blood on the standing rigging. I promise to be careful, Joe.
Show him how to run out on a yard. And I dare say you'll see some of his evening grog. Yeah?
Certainly.
Go then. And don't you come near your bum boy capers, Joe. Do you hear me now?
The captain prepares to take to the sea.
So many scars.
Well, what of it, Mr. Byron?
How many battles must he have been in, sir?
It is all luck. No man is wounded by choice, Mr. Byron. All the courage and conduct in the world may flaunt no wound.
Now for the jack. It is magnificent up here. I had no conception. Aye, well, you want to look out now, mate. There ain't no rattlings no more from here. And you got the whole Atlantic to fall into.
How small the captain looks. How pink.
Watch me shin up to the truck, then you do the like.
Well, I think I shall run out onto the yard first.
Still enough up here for you then, is it?
Man overboard!
Who is it?
Down.
Who is it?
Down
overboard!
Commit! Mind my clothes!
Watch, I'm on the clothes.
Easy now! Head up!
I can't swim!
There's nothing to it! Let me! Save your effort! The ship there! A line to me!
Pass the line for the captain there!
Easy now. Easy. Answer me.
We thought you was losing the number of your mess there, mate.
Don't be a goddamn fool, Joe Place.
Mr. Grant! Have an end put to this infernal hallooing.
Ain't you never seen the captain resurrect a drowned man?
Stop it, Dom!
What do you say, Bondon?
Bless you, sir. He does it often and often.
Always the same. Every time a man goes overboard. Silence! Fore and aft! Killick!
Bring me a towel.
Now, sir, come around.
Pass the word for the doc. Mrs. Wogan, good afternoon.
I could have died.
So could I, Michael, at the sight of Captain Aubrey in that state of nature.
Died drowned in the depths of your eyes.
But you did not.
Blue like the sea, closing over my head.
I would send another captain to drag you back to me, no matter how cold. Oh,
dear Louisa, you save my soul every day, every hour. I should have died long since, did I not love you so.
It is a pretty thing, my dear. Love through a keyhole. The tar and his pollen, she's a caged bird.
And he a true heart of oak.
Hello? Who's there?
Someone comes, my love. Good night.
There are explicit orders of communication with the prisoners.
Is that Herapath?
It is, Mr. Byron, sir.
What are you doing here?
I beg pardon, sir. I meant to wash my hands downstairs.
Below?
Yes, sir. I lost my way, sir.
Do you not know your watch is set, Herapath?
I did not hear the bell, sir.
You must mind your duty, be it ever so new to you. Even if you run now, you will surely miss the muster.
Is that a bad fault, sir?
It is by far the worst crime on the ship.
Cut him down. What is next, Mr. Pullings?
Herapath, sir. Fore topman, starboard watch. Guilty of absence from the muster on Friday night.
500 lashes, mate.
Follow that with a keel on it, if you're lucky.
What have you to say for yourself?
Nothing, sir. Except that I regret my absence extremely.
Have his officers anything to say for him?
He's not offended before, sir.
Is he willing and obedient, Mr. Byron?
He is, sir, though unhandy. He will no doubt apply himself in the future.
Looking well, matey. Perhaps only 300.
Herapath, if every member of a watch were to imitate your conduct in this folly and wickedness, the ship would soon be in a pretty state. We set the watch and muster to prove it so, that the enemy may never find us unprepared. Do you understand this?
I do, sir.
Well, I trust you do. You will mind Mr. Byron's words and apply yourself. That will be all.
On with the slime draft. That's all we can do. Herapath, how do you do?
Better than him, sir, I think.
Jakruski is once again in a coma. How does his body stand it? I cannot tell. He lives as would be thought severe in a Dublin doss house, and yet his frame is kept thoroughly robust. Perhaps our notions of hygiene are utterly fallacious after all. Show me your hands. Still more raw flesh than undamaged skin, I see. Your shirt? You must put on some flesh. Our diet may not be delicate, but it is wholesome. See him? Men may thrive with nothing else.
I do find the biscuit excellent, sir.
Meat and cheese, puddings. You must not be over nice. You're no longer a gentleman, Herapath.
That is one thing that... Doctor, might I beg you to advise me?
In what manner?
I should like to thank the captain for taking me from the water, but I...
Is it your judgment day that gives you pause?
In part, but also I do not know how to address him. Through whom? Whether it would be proper at all.
In service matters, I believe the first lieutenant would be the intermediary.
Mr. Pullings.
Yet, if that is a note, and if it is intended for the captain, I think I may undertake to be your messenger. What is going on here, for all love?
Captain's orders, sir. Sheets in to be applied to the ladies' cabin sides.
Madam, if you're at leisure, will you cease this unholy din? Ma'am, I propose attending you to the poop.
You are very kind, Doctor, but I believe today I shall decline the pleasure.
Oh, would you then pass up some small moment of peace?
Oh, the hammering does not discommode in the least.
I have some balls of wax for the ears.
No, no, I assure you. I hope your patient is doing well, sir.
I have three fevers and an alcoholic coma, ma'am. To which do you refer?
To the young man with the long curly hair, the one the captain so heroically saved when he fell into the sea.
Young Icarus. Mm. Comes along, ma'am. A few ribs stove only. We all have 24, more than enough.
Shall you pull him through, do you think?
No, certainly. Never fear.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you.
Never did I notice that his hair curled.
Perhaps we should go take the air, after all. Shall we be calling at Cape Verde, Doctor, do you know?
The briefest touch, ma'am. Few other places to revictual in the middle of the Atlantic.
Mr. Grant, I have sent for you because it has come to my notice that certain of your watch have been attempting to enter into communication with a female prisoner above the cable tiers.
Perhaps we should move away.
You are aware of the consequences, sir, of disobedience to orders?
I fear the proximity of the skylight is such little discretion possible aboard a man of war.
Furthermore, one of your midshipmen has endeavoured to bribe the armourer to make him a key to her cabin.
Oh.
But a few weeks of sailing with that infernal woman, and such is the criminality we have come to. What will it be like by the time we reach New Holland?
People do not die of love, do they, Doctor?
I have known them brought pretty low.
No, Mr. Grant. I will not have my ship run like a bawdy house. I will have my orders obeyed. Henceforth, you will find a sentry posted at the lady's door. You may go.
Having been present at that young man's rescue...
Herapath. His name is Herapath.
I feel a certain interest in him, Doctor.
Well, I conceive he's a young man of good family and of a certain education. Mm-hmm. He's run away to sea because of some misfortune or distress, presumably of an erotical nature. Perhaps he has fled from an unkind mistress.
What a romantic thought.
Little there is romantic, ma'am, about a man of war.
The lecherous sodomites.
I have a note for you from Michael Herapath.
They have been sending Mrs. Wogan Billy Doo. God rot them all. They bored holes in the bulkhead of her cabin, stood in line to see her in a shift. The odious wench. Would you believe it, Stephen?
I would. And more.
Huh. This is very prettily put. Civilest line I've ever had, I dare say, from anyone I pulled out. Oh, I take this very kindly. Will you read?
I will not. I would you will listen now. You are excessive, Jack, in the matter of this lady.
You will remember I was against it from the start. The hounds cannot keep their breeches on because of her.
I say you are unjust. Louisa Wogan shares in the sin of Eve, sure, but otherwise she's blameless. Not a leer, not a wink, not a handkerchief dropped.
Was it not for her, we should be sailing sweet as... swans.
And I'm come to tell you that I require a free hand with Mrs. Wogan.
You too, Stephen, by God.
Do not mistake me, Jack. I beg, these are not carnal words. Did you ever take pause to wonder why, when I did say I should not voyage, that I changed my mind?
You need a holiday, my dear Maturin. A break to set you up. What gold for a natural philosopher would be Botany Bay, eh? If not for an adventuress.
You wish for me to plumb the lady's mind.
It contains a great deal more than was revealed to us, of that I am very sure. And what she has to say may resolve your doubts about Mrs. Villiers.
Few doubts do I have of Diana Villiers.
Just so.
We must consider the possibility that Diana may have mentioned my name to our subject.
Well, that is an eventuality that will be resolved the moment you meet her, no? We have allowed Mrs. Wogan a confidante, her maid, Peggy Barnes. Fortunately, that young woman was taken up with her mistress and proved to have a history of her own. Infanticide.
Enough for transportation. Mm. Well done, my dear Sir Joseph. And do we suspect this Peggy?
No. Mrs. Wogan has been well schooled in discretion. We had hopes of a young man by the name of Michael Herapath, A kind of secretary, a besotted follower. She used him and amused him as it suited her.
He told you nothing?
It seems Herapath truly had nothing to tell. We let him go. Huh. The lady had availed herself of all his resources. I do pray you to consider of this Maturin. Accompany the leopard and your friend Aubrey. Hmm? This skein that Louisa Wogan is weaving would be well worth the untangling. And it would keep your hand in.
Do you fear that I'm nearing the end of my usefulness?
I do beg that you will consider this, my dear Maturin.
September the 20th, 12 degrees 30 north, 18 degrees 44 west. No wind. The doldrums. People variously employed. At 7, attempted tow with ship's boats. At 9, surgeon reported.
We have the jail fever aboard.
Oh. Is there no doubt?
None. Petechiae, the palpable spleen, brown, dry tongue, I was certain the moment I saw it. Swords, raging heat, the mulberry rash, not a symptom is absent. This morning I closed the eyes of my three original patients. Jail fever it is, and of the most virulent kind.
During the forenoon watch, fumigated by section with burning of brimstone. At 3...
For as much as it hath pleased Almighty God of his great mercy to take unto himself the souls of our dear brothers here departed.
September the 21st. Committed to the deep, Vincent Foxcroft, four topmen. David MacDonald, marine. Pavel Tatarchuk, cook's assistant.
We therefore commit their bodies to the deep, to be turned into corruption.
22nd, James Stokes, master's mate. Paul Martin, assistant surgeon. Michael Adam, Henry Adam, supernumeraries.
Looking for the resurrection of the body, when the sea shall give up her dead, and the life of the world to come.
Doctor, may I trouble you?
Lieutenant Pullings, my dear.
You have a vile headache? Cold? A distinct rigour about the midriff and the limbs?
You are in the right of it, sir.
Just so. You've come to the very shop.
28th. Horace Weatherby, midshipman. William Needham, captain's clerk. Sean Soames, loblolly boy.
I sometimes think... if only we could sight a French ship. If only we could hear the drumbeat and the guns boom. We should cure ourselves in that instant. But we wallow still. Becalmed in oppressive heat, near 600 miles out in the ocean. Men dying faster than the plague.
No, no. I now have 11 convalescents. They survived their crises. We have prime physic and we'll belay it with all nines. Never fear, Tom. You'll hoist your flag yet.
Thirtieth, William McPherson, Lieutenant, Royal Marines. Jacob Hawley, boy, third class.
According to the mighty working, whereby he is able to subdue all things to himself.
October the 2nd, wind southeast, course south 25 east, 9 degrees 15 north, 11 degrees 20 west, fresh winds, rain, no deaths this day.
Oh, how I long for 24 hours of uninterrupted sleep.
You will get them now.
I will. I believe the epidemic is indeed over. And should anything untoward occur with these my convalescents, Herapath will wake me. Perhaps I shall retain my beard, as the Roman emperors did in war.
Herapath has behaved very well, I collect.
Good, quiet, intelligent young man it is. And since I'm now alone, Jack, I desire that you will make him my mate.
I cannot do that.
True, he has not studied physic nor surgery, but he is already more handy and knowledgeable than the pitiable quackeens with their surgeon's hall papers.
You ask the impossible, Stephen.
A set of old wives' tales and a second-hand saw.
The Sick and Hurt Board would never countenance my making an assistant surgeon. But I will tell you what I can.
I am very much beholden, sir, to the doctor for his good opinion.
The rules of the service, Herapath, do not allow me to enter you as assistant surgeon on the ship's books without the proper certificates. So I propose rating you as a midshipman. Alas, I have 3 vacancies there.
I should perhaps observe, sir, that I am an American citizen.
Are you, though?
In case that should be a bar to your most obliging offer, sir.
So you are. Cambridge, Massachusetts. Well, I am very sorry to have to tell you that is indeed a bar to future promotion. You cannot expect ever to become a commission officer in His Majesty's Navy.
I must endeavour to bear it, sir.
You have no dislike to fighting the French, I take it?
I was in arms against them under General Washington, sir. I am happy to do what I can against any of your other enemies, unless England should go to war with the United States, which, God forbid.
Amen to that. Poor Stokes was about your size. You may wish to buy his uniforms when they're sold at the mainmast. Here is a note for Mr. Grant. He will introduce you to the young gentleman. I shall be glad to welcome you to my quarterdeck, Mr. Herapath. October the 5th. At 2, crossed the line, without ceremony. Fair weather, wind east by southeast. Pork and plum duff only. 116 men in total perished of the jail fever.
What's the buzz, Bondon?
We're bearing up for Recife, mate.
Eh?
Recife, don't mumble, mate.
God pang you, Lloyd Joe. Your ears got the plague and none of the rest of you. Recife. Brazil. Touch and go. Just.
Well, I hope there may be time to get Mrs. Place a poll parrot.
Sake, you think? No watering, I heard. No cattle. Green stuff, belike. No more.
The old girl grieved her last poll parrot. Something cruel. Oh, would you look at this now?
Punk.
Would you ever have believed it? Even the dockyard could pass such a rotten bit of wood.
They got us to sea in an ancient sieve, Joe. That's what they did. Sunday travel and incest is all the same to them dockyard bunch of bearded piss cats.
Mate, we're aboard a coffin ship.
Oi, Joe. A floating coffin. An unlucky one at that.
We will put off our 80 convalescents in Recife, Mr. Herapath, and replenish our medicine chest.
That will not be before time.
I shall be obliged to spend many hours in drawing up a statement of our requirements, writing letters. May I therefore beg you to attend Mrs. Wogan to the poop?
Mrs. Wogan, sir?
Is the unfortunate lady who's confined to the orlop, above the tiers. You're not yet familiar with our sea terms. I mean the floor below this in about the middle. The door is on your right-hand side. Starboard, as we say. No, larboard, for you'll be going backwards. No. Come, I'll show you the way and present you to the lady.
Pray do not trouble, Doctor. I know the way perfectly. That is, I have often remarked the particular door. It is on my way to where I now sling my hammock.
Well, here's the key. You'll make him my compliments, if you please.
The only people to go, Stephen, will be you and whatever invalids you absolutely insist upon landing. I do not mean to lose a minute nor a single man by desertion. Recife has a notorious distillery.
Here are the names of those that must go.
It will break Tom Pulling's heart.
I examined him with great care not an hour ago.
Well, we shall lie in the outer road. You will get your physic. I shall call on the governor, do the civil. Try and see whether I can get a few hands in this port. As it is, I have barely 60 to a watch, God help us, and a 50-gun ship.
And you take from me my peerless first lieutenant and leave me with Grant.
Have you finished your letter?
Nearly. You wish me to add a message?
No. Love, of course. Sophie and the children. Is that Mrs. Wogan's letter?
It is addressed to Diana Villiers. I thought that would shake you.
I shall be interested to see what it contains. You must rid your mind of these weak prejudices. A document that bears upon our war is not a private paper.
It shall be as you direct.
Sometimes I'm compelled to be devious, Jack. I'll not do it from choice, but I beg you'll forgive me. You must be of good cheer. The nuns will soon have you on your feet again and homeward bound. Or would you really rather be sewn into your hammock with a shot at your feet?
I think of so many that were.
Tom Pullings never did say die yet. You cannot be permitted to stay aboard.
I understand.
Proper diet, sister's care.
You had best go, Doctor.
Oh, yes, there's not a moment to be lost. You will take good care of him, sister.
That we will, sir. Of all of them.
10,000 thanks again. This is for your poor. And I beg you to pray for the souls. For the souls.
Do you have any soul that is special to you, Doctor?
Pray for Stephen Maturin.
In Desolation Island by Patrick O'Brien, dramatized for radio by Roger Daines, Captain Jack Aubrey was played by David Robb, Dr. Stephen Maturin by Richard Delane, Louisa Wogan, Teresa Gallagher, Michael Herapath, Samuel Barnett, Lieutenant Pullings, David Holt, Barrett Bondon, Sam Dale, Preserved Killick, John Glover, Midshipman Byron, Nick Underwood, Sir Joseph Lane, Michael Burtonshaw, Peggy Barnes, Hannah Wood, Lieutenant Grant, Jonathan Taffler, and Josiah Place by Lloyd Thomas. All other parts were played by members of the cast. Desolation Island was a BBC Scotland production, directed by Bruce Young.
And you can hear the final part of Desolation Island at the same time next week, when a powerful Dutch warship closes in on the Leopard and Captain Aubrey has to decide whether to fight or flee.